What you trying to say? I'm short. Hi, my name is Leslie Strange, and I'm an alcoholic. Amen. It's spelled just like it sounds, and I am just like it is. Pretty much. We're going to have a ball here. I think I'm pretty funny, and that's my ego that tells me that. So if you don't laugh, I'll cry and run out of here. Obviously, I'm not the gentleman that was supposed to speak here tonight. And it's all imperfect plans and perfect design by that perfect one. And I'm just so, my heart is full, and I'm just so excited. My recovery date is November the 2nd, 1988. I just turned 29 years old. Yes, thank you. This is the guy. Yeah. And I say that because I usually don't do that, because I call myself trying to be that false modesty, that humble. I don't want nobody to know how many. I got a couple 24 hours. No, I have 29 years. You would want to know that, boo. I'm a little extra. I'm a little dramatic. And so just enjoy the ride and get your giggle on. I'd like to thank the committee, and I'd like to thank Dick, who is in traffic, and I guess you guys, I just met Dick, and I know Dick's entire life. Oh, see, he's on recording, so you don't have to tell him, he'll hear it. But he's a beautiful guy, he's a beautiful soul, and I just, I feel spirit through the phone. It's like, okay, whatever you need. Okay, I gotta go now. Bye. So, he's on his way, and I thank God for him. The gentlemen, the tapers, everybody that showed up tonight, the fact that the traffic was beautiful. I work at the CDC, and I got here quickly, and I live in Powder Springs, so you know that drive every day. For those of you from Georgia, it's maddening, but God just said, hey, y'all, move out the way. She's got something she's got to do for me. I'd like to thank my love, my new love, my love. I love her more than bacon baby. And that's Brittany. You please welcome and embrace her. She's a new. And I'm telling on you, yes, I am. But she's just so on fire, which makes me on fire. And you know how fire spreads. It just takes over. I am the oldest of four children. And I'll tell you, like our book says, disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, what we're like today. And I used to be that little girl. That little black girl in L.A., I'm from Los Angeles, California. Yes, West Side. Oh, you can't do, I don't want you doing it. Homegirl. Look, she said, see, my cousin. She's just light-skinned. It's okay. So, you know, I grew up in L.A., in the West Side of L.A., over by San Vicente, if anybody knows the area near the Beverly Center, and my mother sent me to Catholic school. My mother was a single parent. She was all into her blackness, so I was extremely confused, because when I would go to school, she sent me to Catholic school, and my high school was Notre Dame Academy off of Pico Boulevard, and it was all girls Catholic school, and it was like 12 black girls, so, you know, there was that issue there. Like, I did not know who I was, because I'm at school during the day listening to Peter Frampton, and like going, yeah, ready, okay, all right. And then in the evening, I come home listening to Sly and the Family Stone and the Last Poets talking about when the revolution come, kill the people. So I didn't know what to do, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, it was a beautiful childhood as I look back on it. Like I said from the beginning, I was the oldest of four. My mother was a military wife. I was born in Fort Bragg, North Carolina, in 1960, so you guys can count, yeah, I'm that old. And so my niece tell me every time I try to do something, And so my mother was married to my father. They met in the military, and my mother was a medic, and my father was a paratrooper, so he was crazy for jumping out of planes. He was in Fort Bragg and jumped out of planes. And my mom, you know, she stayed and became a stay-at-home mom, and he was very abusive. My father was extremely abusive, and he would beat her up in his jump boots. You know, he'd come and just beat her up, and her eyes would be black, and you couldn't recognize who she was. And at that time, I was only 2 years old, but I told my mom I remember certain scenes, and I remember certain things and instances. It's like them going at it, or him going at her, and she hitting him with this. Remember those hand mirrors that had the matching little brush that sat on your vanity? She hitting him with that. That whole Ike and Tina Turner thing going on, you know, 1960, 62, up in that era. And so my mother had back-to-back kids, so she had another brother named Joseph. He was a junior, and then she had another son. I'm sorry, she had two sons, Joseph and Kim. His name was Kim. Those two children inadvertently died a month apart from two different things, me still being the oldest. I got to know them. I have pictures of them. And one died of pneumonia, and one died of meningitis. And at that time, they didn't know what meningitis was. Bless you. And if it was contagious or not. So I remember her telling me the sad story as I grew older that they had to dig a hole in the ground and put all of his baby stuff in there and burn it because they didn't know if it was contagious. And then 3 months after that, my mother's mother passed away. So besides getting beat by her husband, having two children that passed away, all she had was me. And he continued to beat her, and he continued to beat her. And then one day she got that aha, like, I'm done. I'm tired. So my mother was originally from Los Angeles, so she took me, and she was pregnant with my brother, my last brother, Chris. And she got on a train, and I remember it being hot on that train. I was about 4 years old by then. And she took that train. She called home. She says, hey, I'm coming home. And that's how I ended up in Los Angeles, California. I'm kind of glad, because if I'd have stayed in North Carolina, I'd probably been talking like this right here. Maybe not. But I was able to come back to Los Angeles, and that's where I was raised. My mother started out working at Lockheed, and then she eventually went into the movie industry. When I tell people this, and I say this often, when they ask me, where are you from? I tell people this is for the drama effect. This is part ego, part drama, and 100% truth. I'm a Hollywood baby. And when I say that, my mother was in the post-production end of the movie industry. So she was in the dark rooms. She was in there where they made the duplicates and the copies of the film. So after they'd film, they'd bring it in, and they'd make copies, and they'd send it out to all the theaters, and that's how you got your 75 millimeter tapes and all that kind of stuff. And that's what she did. Unfortunately, my mother was in a room full of older white men, so she had to combat a whole lot of stuff, you know, just stuff, you can imagine. That industry is no joke. As I grew up, I hadn't touched anything. I was a pretty good kid. I didn't apply myself, typical, you know, but my mother wasn't an alcoholic. There was alcohol around the house, but the most we did, the first time I got introduced to alcohol, I think I was about 16, and you know how the parents would spike the punch? See, I came up in the era when it was Tyrolia. It was Akadama. You Akadama mama. Remember that? I came up in that era. Manischewitz, Boone's Farm, you know, and then later on Ossie Spumante. So my thing, my whole life was built around just go to school, do what you're supposed to do. And my mother became the abuser because, as you may have known, that either, like they tell you now, that the abused become the abuser. So my mother was very abusive. Pretty tough lady, but she supplied us with a wonderful home. We did everything. We went to the theater, we went to plays, we went to operas, we read. She'd like turn off all the TVs, go get a book. So I was that kid that was growing up reading. I was that kid growing up going to school, loving my friends at school. I don't know what happened. I don't know when I crossed that line. I don't know what happened, because everything in me says I should have been. But where I stand right now is I am an alcoholic. So if you go by tradition, I should have been a college graduate. I didn't graduate from college until I was 51 years old. I didn't go to college. So as time grows up and it starts getting to the 80s, and it's time to, hey, how you doing? What's up? Hey. So, you know, we getting into the 80s and all that kind of stuff, and now we're partying. Now Leslie's partying, because I done moved out my mother's house. See, my thing was, I had to get out of her house. I did not like my mother. I'll talk about her and my fourth step later. Several fourth steps. And a couple tenths. And every now and then today. But anyway, not digress. So, as I grew up, I started partying, because that's the thing you do. What do? When you're 20-something years old, you got your own apartment, you work at Pacific Bell. Hello, how can I help you? Your phone is off. I'm so sorry to hear that. How can I help you? Okay. You want to make some payment arrangements? Sure, no problem. See, I always knew how to get a job and keep a job, because I came up in the era when they said, get a job, get a house, get good benefits, and marry some guy. I did not do any of that in order, though. I married some guy to some guys. And I did that when I got sober. So that's a whole train wreck. That's a whole nother story. It take me 2 weeks to tell you them stories. But the thing about it is that I did those things to get out of my mom's house. I did not want to go to college. I want to back up a minute. My mother came down with lupus when I was about 13, 14 years old. And they didn't know what it was. They said it was mostly for Jewish women and black women. They didn't know what she had. Her skin changed. Her organs started shutting down. She was having a lot of problems. So I was also the adult child. So now I'm taking care of my mom, I'm taking care of my little brother, I'm taking care of everybody, I'm cooking, I'm washing and everything. But during the day, I'm going to a great Catholic school, living in a wonderful area, having good things, like I said. So can you imagine me? Just step into me for right now. Just step into what I am right now. I'm that responsible kid. I'm that kid that's going to get up and do what mom says. Then I got tired of doing what mom says, and I got tired of mom putting her hands on me, and I got tired of being called those B words and all those other uncute words and those H words. I got tired of that. So my only outlet is I don't want to be here. See, I know now. See, you can't ever see till you passed it. If you're in the picture, you can't see it. It's so beautiful when you make art, you can't see it till it's completed. Well, now I'm that art that's completed. I can see it now. And I praise God to be able to see every bump in the road, every hurtful feeling, everything that did not feel good to me, and everything that was not good for me. See, I wasn't a child that was molested or raped or anything like that. By the grace of God, I made it through that part of it, but I had to still relieve myself of the bondage of my thinking and my lack of esteem for self and my lack of self-worth and not knowing who I am or whose I was. I had to do something, so I started with the other party favors, because that was cool. I could do that. All my best friends were those great, blonde, pretty girls, and we all hung out and everything, and they would always get the best of everything. So, of course, I hung out with people to get the best of everything, because I didn't know how to get it. And they got it. And then I'd take a drink. And then I'd go to these little parties with the little six-packs and the little beers and the little Mickeys and all that kind of stuff, and you drinking. And I like that buzz. I like the way it made me feel, because now, all of a sudden, instead of being 5'2", I'm 5'10". Instead of being flat-chested, well, that's a whole nother story. I'm sorry. Well, you know, at the time, see, just come with me. Instead of having a short little fro, I had long, luxurious hair. It was just everything transformed then. I was cute. I could talk to the boys. The boys would talk to me, and I liked him, and he liked me, and we're going to get together, call me, boo. That's what we would do. I got my own apartment, and things progressively got worse. And as I, like I said, when I sit back and I look back on that, I saw how bad everything started getting, because one was not ever enough. Who does one drink? I used to go out with my mom. Sometimes we'd go out to like some little comedy shows, and she'd get her little nice little daiquiri, and it would separate because it was sitting so long. And I'm sitting there on like my fifth kamikaze, like, you not through? You left some, or she'd leave some, and I go, how do you do that? See, because I thought it was cool. It was okay. So fast forward. So I started doing those things and staying up all night and working at the phone company was almost like a crutch because, you know, you could always go out on disability. So I'd screw up my time so bad and my attendance was so bad that it got to a point where I could just take off on disability. And that was back in the day when they would pay you half of your paycheck and half of your federal, so you'd get a whole paycheck. Oh, it was party time then. I ain't got to go to work neither. Work is not getting in the way of my drinking. Oh, this is on. It's on. I like this. And I started drinking and partying. And then I'd find out, I'd wake up with people. I'm like, what did you say your name was? My name? I don't remember, but what was your name? You know what I'm saying? I would wake up with people like that, and I'd be in places that were unsafe, and I'd end up, it's just horrible. The pain and the degradation of waking up not remembering what you did the other night. The pain and the degradation, I'm going to tell you something real small. When your car is a rolling coat closet, if you girls are anything like me, I had every shoe I owned in the back. I had undergarments in the back. I had stockings in the back. I had a toothbrush, maybe, if I felt like I was going to get one. Everything was just all a mess, and my life was totally out of order. I got tired. So let me tell you about November 1st, 1988. That's the day before. That 24 hours before. I had been up all night. See, I'm also one of those people that take pills dry. anything that changes my thinking, affects me from here up, I'm going to take it. And what's so cold about it is if you tell me what its effects are, you say, here, just do this, this is how you're going to feel, I'm going to take your word for it. I'm going to follow you to the gates of hell. I'm going to believe that you said this is a smooth scotch, or this is a smooth whiskey, or this is a cool pill. And when you get, or you eat before you get done, then all of a sudden your stomach will be, you know, your stomach will be okay. You know, I was a chemist. See, I was that girl that, okay, if I eat some, did you guys have that? You're going to eat some beans and some solid food, so because you knew you were getting ready to go on a bender, you was going to drink real, real hard, and you wouldn't get nauseated and throw up. Oh, I had all kind of things. Oh, no, and then I stopped. I'm not doing the brown liquor. It's got too much sugar in it. It makes you sick. So I'll just do the white liquor. The orange juice, no, that's nasty. I'm not going to do the orange juice. Maybe if I fry an egg and I put a lot of salt on it, I can maybe eat something after, the day after. All of those things, and none of that stuff worked. That last run, though, it's amazing. If you're anything like me, I'm that alcoholic that thought I fooled everybody. See, I was the girl that came to the barbecue at 86 pounds with two pair of pants on with the pockets touching, trying to put on enough makeup so you wouldn't see the dis-ease inside, trying to fix the hair just right so you wouldn't see the dis-ease inside. I had the unmitigated gall to have braces on my teeth when I came into the rooms. So I'm going to get my teeth done. There's probably all kind of DNA in it. I didn't know what that was. But I tried to fix those outsides up so much and so bad and so fake and so fraudulent. But the pain, you know, you stay around here for a while. If you're anything like me, I forget till I meet somebody and they describe something. And I'm like, wow, I remember that. See, I need that newer person, or that person that just came off of a run, or that person that's just coming back into the room, that chronic relapser, that person that comes in and you see the look of desperation. You see their eyes just tear up because you tell them things like, see, I'm that girl, I'll lift you up. I'll hold you by your face and say, baby, you are enough. And you see them just cry because nobody ever told them that, because nobody ever told me that. You're going to be okay if you stick with us. Tears, because nobody ever told them that. They never felt like anything. They never felt like they were enough. So when I came into the rooms, I came in voluntarily. I slid my ass sideways, like James Brown, into these rooms. And the coolest thing about it is when I found the rooms, my mother was my road dog. My mother used to go to all the meetings with me, the lady that I couldn't stand, the lady that was abusive to me, the lady that I hated. When she found out I had a problem, she said, come on, boo, let's go. So I started going to meetings. Now I'm going to meetings in Beverly Hills. And they're talking good stuff. They sitting out there, look like a used car lot. I'm seeing Maseratis and Ferraris. I was like, oh, shoot, I've arrived. Shoot, they're not drinking either. And then when I come into the place, I started hearing things like, my parents, they cut me out of the trust fund. And I don't know what I'm going to do. My dad's mad at me because I wrecked the Ferrari. So I'm this little black girl from L.A., and I'm sitting up there like, you know you can get a job, right? You know you can get a job. I'm sitting there just taking everybody's inventory. I'm sitting there going, are she serious? Is he serious? Are you kidding me? This ain't getting it. See, because I didn't hear that piece that they talked about. The similarities, not the differences. So I was looking at the differences. You weren't my color. You didn't have what I have. You didn't do what I did. You didn't go through what I went through. And that's all I could think about as a new person. I didn't have anybody to guide me and to tell me just to sit still. One day I was in a meeting and I saw a girl that I knew outside of the rooms. And she said, and I was ready to leave a meeting. I was sitting there. I was antsy. I couldn't sit still. I wanted to leave. And she said, don't leave. I said, but I got to leave. I don't hear nothing. It's not doing anything. See, I wanted to feel something. I'm that microwave baby. I want to feel something. You put it in, you hit the button, ding, it's done. That's what I wanted to hear. That's what I wanted to feel. I want instant gratification. I want to feel good right now. I want to be happy right now. And I'm seeing all these steps and traditions on the wall. And I'm seeing everybody smiling. I'm not happy right now. And then you tell me on top of that I can't drink? What am I supposed to do with the rest of my life? I'm not used to doing what you tell me to do. See, I walk by my own beat of my own drum. I'm that girl. You can't know. I need somebody to give me something quick, like a pill. I need something quick. I need something to dissolve. I need to hurry up. But she said, hurry up and wait. I said, well, I don't hear my story. I came in with a job, braces, a car, getting my hair done every 2 weeks, getting my nails done. You know what I'm saying? I had back in the day. You remember back in the day when they had the gold nail and all the charms and stuff? You probably did that. Yeah. Come on. We talking. Yeah. So I was that girl. I was getting stuff done. I was looking a certain kind of way. And I couldn't identify. She said, stay until you hear your story. And I heard my story. And then I heard it again and again. And again, and I said, okay, I'm starting to pick up on this. It's not about where I came from. It's not about who I knew. It's not about being that Hollywood baby. It's not about having my mother Yvonne beat your ass every day. Excuse my language. I said ass. Get over it. Okay, put me on the prayer list. Top, Leslie Strange. Anyway, So I came into these rooms, I didn't know anything about anything. I used to see the commercial. I don't know if any of you guys remember from the 80s when they used to have the commercial, the people standing around in a big circle, and they had the candle. Hi, my name is Joe, and I'm an alcoholic. I don't know if you guys remember. There was a nationwide commercial, and I used to see that. I'm like, oh, they're just weak. As I took a drink. So I came into the rooms, and I did what they said. I came into the rooms, and I stayed one time, November 2nd, 1988. And when I saw the word God on the wall, and I saw men stand at this podium and cry and tell on themselves, I saw women stand and tell the truth about themselves. I saw them all hug and hold hands. I saw the best, worst coffee made ever in my life. All of that meant something. You mean to tell me I could sit an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours with people, and I can tell my business? And you're not going to laugh at me? You're not going to judge me? I was pretty okay with the God thing. See, I'm a recovering Catholic, too. So I'm real special, Dominus and all of that. And I'm a recovering molested Catholic child. I was one of those children. You don't hear about the girls. You hear about all the boys, but you don't hear about the girls. And you really don't hear about African-American girls. I'm one of them girls. Yeah. So I'm coming from all of that stuff. Some of it I remember, some of it I didn't. And then you tell me I can tell you that? I look at the steps on the wall and I look at the joy in your face and I was happy. I didn't have a... See, the big book talks about every man, woman, and child has a fundamental idea, God. That basic idea that something's running this planet and it ain't you, Leslie. And look at what you've done with what you've been able to run. And it didn't come out so good, so you might want to try leaning a little bit more. Yeah, you might have leaned at times, but to stay leaned, get out of your agnostic temperament, get out of your agnostic thinking, get out of your agnostic fearsome self, and try something a little different. See, the God thing was okay. I just didn't work it like it could be worked. I didn't do what needed to be done, because I didn't have a guide. I didn't have directions. It's like we got here with the navigation. So, you know, my co-pilot, you know, Brittany says, I got this. I'm good. I'm a good co-pilot. She punches in the address, hits the thing. You can go straight right now. Now you can make a left. 85 north. I did that good, huh? I need to hire myself out for the voice. Anyway, so, you know, and she did that. And I got that GPS. That's God. But you have to have a co-pilot. And for me, that was my sponsor. Yeah, I can try to drive the vehicle all day long, but my sponsor was my co-pilot. Let me tell you how I got her. So I saw this lady, and she had a job. She had on a suit. She looked really, really good. And her name was Brenda. And she was standing at the podium. She was talking very well, and she just hit me. It hit me right here. I don't know about you, but I'm that girl that if something hits me right here, if it's birthed in my spirit right here, if it hits me right here, that means that that is the thing that God is trying to give me some kind of information. It's got to hit me right here. That's how I roll. It hits me. Sometimes quickly. Sometimes slowly, but eventually it'll hit me in my soul, at the depths of my soul. And I walked up to her and I said, can you sponsor me? And she said, baby, I'd love to. For somebody who never got nobody to tell them I love you, my mother never hugged me and said, I love you and you are enough. So to get an absolute stranger, another woman at that, to hug me and tell me I love you, I don't know about you, but that feels real, 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 real good. In the meantime, I met this man. I was 30 days, he was 60 days. He was 6 foot two and about real, real, real dark and had like size 13 feet. And I said, I like him. And he looked over at me, he's like, hey. I was like, hey. Eventually, I trudged the road of unhappy destiny with him, and we got married. See, I'm that girl that does stuff out of order, too. I didn't tell you that part. I have the baby first, then I get the man. Then I get married. That's, you know, I do it that way. Twice. Sober. So we started dating, and that's how I ended up with the name Strange with the first husband. And they used to tell me, oh, don't get in a relationship within the first year, and you shouldn't do this, and you shouldn't do that. And I said, well, Bill W. had a wife. And Dr. Bob did, too. I'm getting me a husband. So I got me a husband. That's just what I got, a husband. You guys going to say that all weekend. It's your husband. Say that, ladies. Husband. Okay, there you go. You can have that. That's your Ebonics class right there. I'm cracking me up. I don't know about you guys. I am crazy as heck. Anyway, I love this lady. She's staying with me. Stay with me, Mommy. So we got married, and he had lost his job, so he decided he wanted to go into the Army. So one more time, I went back in that military thing. So it's first duty station. I had a little over a year. I had the baby. Had a little over a year. It's first duty station was Mannheim, Germany. So here I am with getting ready to get on a plane. And my sponsor wasn't available, and I read it to another girl named Gail. She must have laughed at me the whole 8 hours I read my inventory. And I'm like, that's not supposed to be funny, but it was hilarious. I read it. I did it exactly like she told me to. And through all this time, don't get me wrong, I was going to meetings. I did more than 90 meetings in 90 days. See, I'm a good student, but I'm not a great learner. Let me repeat that one more time. I'm a great student, but I'm not a good learner. See, you could teach me because I'm a book girl. See, I can read and I can analyze and I can debate and I can chop it up with you. I'm a word girl, too. I'll look up the Latin version and I'll look up the Hebrew version and I'll put the two words together. Read, reparare, repeat. Okay, that's what that means. See, I'm that girl. But I'm that person of the educational variety that has to be bent over in a fetal position, sucking her thumb, twiddling her hair, tore up to learn. See, I don't know about you, but I get around here for a little while and I have the unmitigated gall to think that why is she taking so long to do her inventory? I forgot that too was me. My sponsor told me, but I have to go and learn another way. That's why I like that piece in the back of the book. They talk about that spiritual experience of the educational variety. I call that the spiritual ass whooping. I love that. I love that. You know what I'm saying? So all through all of this year and so, before I get ready to get on this plane to go and trudge this road of happy destiny with this man and this baby, I'm doing my inventory. I'm doing my fourth step. And the only way, and see my... I follow directions. And there's something about that book. There's a piece that people don't really realize. There's a piece in that book. There's a piece in that book that talks about after you do your fourth step, you take it down and you review it and make sure you didn't leave out anything. And then there's another little piece after that, that nugget that says, shut up for an hour. Well, it don't really say shut up for an hour. It just says, you know, just kind of chill out for an hour, okay, whatever. But be quiet for 1 hour, just 1 hour. And the only way I managed to do that, I turned off my radio, it was raining, and I was lost for an hour on the freeway. I couldn't find out how to get home, so that's how I was quiet. And the spiritual experience, the freedom, the lifting, it came up from my toes. It started coming up, and all of a sudden, I started crying. Because it was like I shed a whole bunch of extra skin and layers of fat and pain and disgust and humility and just humiliation and just a whole bunch of stuff, just kind of like I felt lighter. And that was my very first aha moment in these rooms. And I was able to live. So I went over there with that man the next day, 12 hours nonstop with a breastfeeding child. It's hard to breastfeed for 12 hours on a plane to keep him shut up. Anyway, that's a whole nother story. Whew, I'm still tired. But anyway, he's 27. I'm like, I'm tired. I'm still tired. So I get over there. And we get into the housing. I love Europe. Loved it. And then all of a sudden my father shows up. Now mind you, When my mother left my father, I never got to see him again because she threatened him and said if he ever came to look for us, she would have him beat up. Well, he didn't know. He's a country boy. He's from Moultrie, Georgia. He didn't know. So I never got to see my father again, ever. But I did talk to him on those drunken binges I was going on. I'd find his number, go through the phone book, and I'd call him. But my father showed up again in this other man. So after he drugged me across the floor by my weave, after he beat me down a couple times, after he spit in my face and told me some things that my mother had told me about myself, I said, I gotta go. So I called his commanding officer and I called him. I said, ship me back. So after 2.5 years living in Germany, I went to meetings over there. But my sobriety was contingent upon my spiritual maintenance, and I chose another route, and I started going to church, and that's what I did with my spiritual maintenance, and I started helping out in the community over there. A lot of military. But I ended up getting the same man that my mother had. Hurt my feelings. So I wrapped my baby up, and I came back to my mother's house. So now I'm homeless, because when you live with your mama, you're still homeless. And all I knew to do is just to go ahead and do what I did when I first came, and that was to go to the meetings in South Central California. Now, when I started going to meetings in South Central, you're talking about it, somebody that wants to get sober. If you live in a cardboard condominium, you must really, really, really want to get sober. Okay, it's fine that she lost her trust fund and wrecked her Ferrari and all that, but I wanted to see where the people that I seen totally hopeless. That was for me. I wanted to see the people who were drugged. I wanted to see if you were drugged through the mud. How you living now? I went down into the bowels of South Central and started going to meetings, and that's where I found my God again. Even though I didn't have that quote-unquote kind of bottom, and I used to hate it when I was in outpatient treatment where you got a high bottom, you got a low bottom, it made me feel bad because I'm like, but that's not fair to the people who quote-unquote you put into a category of a low bottom. A bottom is a bottom is a bottom. Anything that's separated and not and apart from God is a bottom. I don't understand that. So I went where this program took me. And I said, okay, if I'm going to be of service, I'm going to be service. I want to be of service of those who need me, not and those who want me, not those who just kind of sort of. I want those people that really are desperate, who really need something. Maybe I can give them back something. So I started doing my own book studies because I talked to a guy named Frank P. He passed away. And Frank, I said, Frank, I want you to come facilitate a big book study in my house. He said, you can do it. I said, no, I can't do that. He said, yes, you can. You've been through the book before. I said, yes. He said, you got all your notes, right? Yeah. You've done the steps. Yeah. You've had a spiritual experience as a result of these steps, right? Yes. Uh-huh. What's the thing we're supposed to pray for, Leslie? I said, the knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. He said, well, go on in the corner somewhere. Go in the corner and go pray that. The knowledge of his will and the power to carry it out. He will give you what you need so you can give this book study. My house ended up with men and women sitting all over my floor. We started having a big book study, and it started going on and on and on. Then I turned my attention to the women. I started working with women heavy. It was something about women, especially women of color. We are so not nice. We are so not nice. And I could see the pain, the same pain that I experienced. I could see the abuse, and I could see the low self-esteem, and I could see the bickering and the cattiness and the messiness. And something said, you are part of this. What can you do to make some kind of difference? See, I'm that girl that sits up there with my sponsees and I listen to them fifth steps and I lay on my bed and I let them talk. And I ask them certain questions and I get into their lives. Because see, if you're anything like me, I am selfish and self-centered and self-seeking. It's all about Leslie. The only way that I can cure that part of my dis-ease, and I say it like that because it's a ill-ease within, but the part of my dis-ease that's the worst part of me is my selfishness and self-centeredness and self-seekingness and self-conscious, all of that self stuff. Skin it to another person. What's going on with you today? How was your day? What's going on with, are you? What happened bad for you today? Anything you need to talk about? That's what I do. See, I'm adamant about this program. I'm passionate about this program. I'm real with this program. I'm not going to play with you with this program. And when I fuss at my sponsees, because they say the ridiculous stuff, talking about I don't feel like going to a meeting right now, I'm not up to it. I said, you heard that pause. I heard that pause. I know y'all had the ticker tape go across your head. You know what I said. I said, get your ass to a meeting. See, I don't command, but when you start to step on the toes of recovery, I'm like, get to a meeting. In fact, call me when you get in the parking lot. 10 minutes before the meeting. Hi. Hello. I'm in the parking lot. Okay, that's good. Okay, I'm going to smoke a cigarette and I'm going to go in. Okay, call me when you get out. Click. Meeting over. She called back. Hi. Hello. I'm back. So let me tell you what. Can I call you back a little later? Uh-huh. Okay, love you. More than bacon. Click. That's just an example of how this program works when the person is willing. I love willing sponsees, but more challenging is those that don't want to do it. Them is the ones that make me pull all my teeth out and have to get some new bridges. I'm like, boo, what are you doing? But then again, I got to remember, when was I like that? See, the thing that keeps me humble and keeps me working with people is I have to remember, when did I feel like that? When did I act like that? When did I do that? When did I do any? I've done that. And what's even more deep for me is I've done it sober. How do you do stuff like that sober? How do you need to do a sex inventory over and over again because your choices are so bad? How do you have to look at your fears over and over again because you're so terrified of taking chances and leaning on God because God ain't acting right and he ain't acting in time? How do I get rid of those resentments? I'm so tired of being mad at you. I hope I'm so tired of being mad at you that I can write about your ass and get you out of my brain. I think the worst part of this is knowing your character defects and your shortcomings. And the ones you don't want to let go of. The ones that seem like they're okay, they may pass the God meter. He might let me slide on this one. It's okay that I've been to bed with 3 men in 1 week with 10 years of sobriety. He going to let me slide on this one. Yeah, slide right into a newcomer chip is what you're going to slide into. Because that big book told me if your sex conduct continues to harm others, and I think I'm one of the others because I'm harming myself too, you will drink again. See, these are the things that people sometimes don't mention to their sponsees. I just mention it, or I tell them to turn to that page, and I don't say nothing. So after that man beat me and I came back here, I went right back to where I know, and I started going to those meetings, and I started giving big book studies. And then all of a sudden, y'all saw something in me. You guys saw something. And all of a sudden, she started asking me to sponsor, and then she started, and I got a couple he's here and there to sponsor. And I said, y'all want something from me? I'm the little black girl with the afro, with the big feet and the little bitty legs who used to get beat up by her mother that didn't really know a whole lot. I'm that little big girl. Y'all want something from me? Well, I think I can help you a little bit. Sure, come on over. Sure, you can spend the night. Sure, it's no problem. I got you. My favorite phrase today when women come up to me is like, boo, I got you. I got you. I don't know what to do. The kids, the husband, the job. Like, boo, I got you, though. Just call me. I got you. Nothing feels better than somebody just to do this and say, I got you. That's all we want to hear. I got you. And God is one of those things that I can't touch, taste, hear, smell, or see him. But y'all are God. Because when you see me come into the room and you don't even know me, see, I got that boldness, baby. I come into the room and I let you know, yes, I'm just like you. I see you looking. It's okay. I'm foreign. It's strange. I'm here. And guess what? You're strange too, so you're with me and we're on the same accord and I feel no less than you and no better than you, so guess what? I'm not scared of you today. Fast forward. How much time I got? Because I can talk to Jesus come back. What? What? I'm good? You're my best friend. Okay. So, fast forward. Because there's so many, like, chapters. This is like a really good book. You, like, you got your leg crossed and you're swinging and you're just eating your bonbons or whatever you like to eat. It's such a good story. Oh, my God. So after the second husband, because then I had another baby, and I had another husband, I'm best friends with both my ex-husbands. I'm the best ex-wife, so if you want an ex-wife that's real cool, just marry me. We'll get a divorce after about 2 years, and I'm your best friend. I'm the best ex-wife because I've learned how to do that. I learned how to be, you know, made, even though they didn't make amends, I made amends to them. How do you make amends to an abuser? I did it. Go figure. And was okay with it. Under the direction of my sponsor, of course. I didn't just walk around, I'm sorry, you beat me in my eye. No, I didn't do that. I love your laugh, thank you. So, you know, I married the second guy, and it's after I came back from Germany, I married the second guy a couple years later, had the baby and everything, and that didn't work out because he didn't want to get a job. He told me, I ain't going to work for nobody. I said, well, you need to work at McDonald's or do something because I'm tired of being everybody's mother. Remember, I was that adult child caretaker. So I'd taken care of everybody. And then being the eldest, now I'm the matriarch of the family. Let me fast forward for you. On May 14th of this year, because my mother got sick, she had after a couple strokes and everything, she had to go from living at home to board and care to assisted living. And she lived in assisted living, and I didn't want to move her. A skilled nursing facility was her last stop in Los Angeles, so I would fly back and forth to see her. And I was the oldest one, and I took care of my mom. And then on my brother lives in Milwaukee now, so we were talking on the phone. We're going to wait till, you know, we're on L.A. time. And I'm going to call my mom. We're going to say Happy Mother's Day. And he got a call. My mother died on Mother's Day this year. So you wonder, why is she standing there smiling? I didn't grieve because guess what? You guys taught me how to get rid of stuff while she was here. You taught me how to make amends, even if I couldn't see my wrong. I made amends to that woman every day when I saw her. I would hold her face and sing Temptations and Supreme songs, and she would just mouth them with me because she lost her voice. See, y'all taught me how to make amends even when I can't see when I've done what I've done, or even if I'm self-righteously angry. Look at what you did to me. See, today the party's over. The DJ don't love. Let me explain to you about recovery. The DJ is taking his crates out to his car. The sound system shut down. The doors are closed and chained. Even the parking lot's chained. You can't even park. Party over. Get into a new kind of party. And this is a party that you can dance to your own music with no DJ, no lights, no partner, but your sponsor. Don't forget. And God is orchestrating the music. That's how I roll today. And I'm so serious about this. But I have a blast. I can't even tell people no when they ask me to help them. I have a blast. I've gone to Puerto Rico by myself, Bermuda by myself. I went to South Africa and spent 10 days by myself because I am that girl, because God told me I can walk anywhere I want to walk, and everywhere I go, I bring a big bright light with me because of God. See, you're not talking to Leslie Strange, and when you see me and you smile at me, you ain't smiling at me. You see the God in me because I know it's there. See, I'm fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. I follow the traditions as well as the steps in these rooms. See, I'm that girl that got a bachelor's degree in 2011, turned right around. And now, tonight, as a matter of fact, I just left class at my job because I'm getting my master's in social work from the University of Southern California. I'm that girl, 57 years old, empty nester, black woman from South Central Recovery. Yeah, I'm that girl. I'm that girl that still takes 10 steps, but now today more so I have less writing to do, but more walking to do. See, for me at this point right now, it's not a whole bunch of writing. Immediately when I've done something wrong, I might want to sit on it and rationalize and justify and die like my old sponsor used to say, but I got to let that go. It ain't going to feel so good because it makes me heavy. See, I'm that girl that when my resentment's wrong, my body reacts. When I'm out of order, I'm not breathing right. I've even learned to breathe, y'all. Look. Because when you stop breathing, your heart's beating and it's struggling to get some air, and then your mind's all over the place. I even learned how to breathe. Just breathe. When you don't know what to do and stuff gets tight, just breathe. Inhale through your nose, exhale through your mouth. Mindfulness. I'm aware now. I'm awake and I'm aware. I'm right here. So when people say, Leslie, how you doing today? I'm awake. I see. Now, you may not have your spiritual awakenings and your spiritual spins like I'm having it, but I'm telling you, this is what I get. Right now, today, I'm dating the most wonderful guy I've ever met in my life, and he was one of my biggest mentors. I have to mention him because, see, I was always that girl that picked the worst guy in the room. The guy that was PTSD, that didn't take his meds, that had... Shut up. Not even kids and stuff, just for no damn reason, just crazy for no damn reason. Just, he know about God, but don't practice nothing. Just, and then you want to be a player. How you gonna be a player and you raggedy as hell? My sponsor, I would call my let me tell you about this lady. This lady named Betty T. She was my sponsor for over 20-something years. After I got done with Brenda, I grew to another level. I got Betty T. Betty T. died 2 years ago. And she used to say, baby, everybody calls me Little Betty, because I imitate her so good. She'd say, baby, well, if you want to know why you with him, do you got a big mirror at your house? Yeah, what about? Just could you go look at it? I said, yeah, what do you see? I see me. You only get who you are. Water seeks its own level, baby. You want better, be better. Cold peace. She would tell me stuff like that. She was an ex-madam. She had a wonderful story. Ex-hooker, ex-madam. A little bit of a pimpishness in her. But she was such a grace. She said, you have to do everything with style, date, grace, and dignity in these rooms, baby. So if you're going to be an adulteress, just make sure you smile while you're adultering. Did that too. Don't even tell nobody. But I'm telling you, this really, really cool guy. And a lot of you guys know him. I'd like to thank him for hooking me up and introducing me to these people here. He was one of my go-to people when I couldn't get in touch with Betty T. And he would always stand there and just smile with his glasses on. And he just looked. And the words that he would say were so clear and succinct. And I could just hear exactly what Ralph White would say. And I would look at him and I'd go, okay. And he was always such a gentleman. He was always really, really cool. I love him from the bottom of my toenails to the top of my head. I decided one day I'm not going to date nobody. I'm good. It's time for me and God. Just again, one more time. I'm going to try one more time to be still. God, I'm going to let you do this. See, I'm a girl that walks around and looks at wedding rings. I'm a ring girl. I see yours from over here. She put her hand down like, no. Because that's one of my desires. See, I find out what my dreams and desires are based on that sex inventory in the big book. I also use that 12 and 12 that a lot of people don't like to play with too much because it's kind of difficult. It doesn't give you exact directions, but it does ask some questions. My sponsor said, well, if you ask some questions, answer it. I'm like, I hate her. That was another level. But I met this guy, and he would always mentor me and talk to me. He was just my friend. And I'm just going to say this to you ladies. Hold on. Don't know when. Don't know how. Don't know where. But if you have the desires of your heart and you clean up the side of the street that's raggedy and nasty and dirty, and if you just follow a few simple directions, and same with the men, you follow a few, because some of us are crazy, I will admit, some of us women are a little tilted, we're not all there, it's okay, forgive us, I'm sorry, I'll make amends for all the women in the world, I'm sorry, we just special. But you... I'm sorry. So, you know, God will give you what you need when you need it. I just said all that to say this. God will give you what you need when you need it. And I so, so appreciate that guy. Right now, that little boy that's a man now, went to the Army, has some depression issues, got to see my son in a paper suit at the VA hospital locked up on the fifth floor. This is months before my mom died. See, I'm that soldier. It's resilience, coping skills, being able to bounce back when times get hard, man. Being able to get up and get up out the bed and throw the Newports away and breathe, man. It's so hard sometimes. Sometimes you just want to cry, but I don't drink. And this is the last thing I'm going to say to you guys. It's amazing. I could have done all the stuff that I told you. Do the steps, the traditions, work on the concept, work on the principles, do all this good stuff and all of this stuff, and still drink because I am bodily and mentally different from my thinking. I ask people all the time, where does your disease center? They'll go, it's here. It's right here. Let me tell you a secret. Let me tell you what I do. When my thinking starts going left and getting negative, I shut it down. You know how I shut it down? What are you doing right now? Right now I'm standing right here. So my thinking started telling me about y'all. You guys thinking certain things about me. My thinking went there. It went there several times while I've been talking to you, but this is what I've done. To combat that, I said, okay, well, but the point is, you're right here. You're right here. Right now. Because see, if I stay too far
into the left, which was yesterday, and too far into the right, which is tomorrow, right now is irrelevant, and I lose the moment. The only thing I can control right now is whether I'm going to stand here for another 10 minutes or I'm going to go and turn and say thank you very much and sit down. That's all I got right here, right now. And that is by God's grace. That's all I got. So when your mind starts racing, reflect and look, Leslie, where are you racing to? Sit down. Enjoy right now. Ralph White always says something, and I'll never forget this. That man said, but is it all right now? I even take it a little step further. I say, look at the clock. Is it 9:02? Well, it's 9:02. It's all right now. 9:03 might be a hell of a ride. 9:01 was a hell of a ride. But right now, 9:02 is the bomb. And breathe. It's all right now. Just breathe. God got it. I got to remember that. So if you take nothing else, if you knew, if you older in between, right now, you may be losing the house. Right now you're in this room. You may be losing the car, the husband, the wife, the kids, the dog, your mind. Right now, I so humbly and gratefully and gracefully thank you so much from the bottom of my heart for listening to a little girl named Leslie Strange. Thank you.
I'm Dick.